Welcome to Spark TO. Meet the speakers who are sparking conversation at Spark the Change Toronto. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Spark TO. This is this podcast that we at Spark the Change Toronto use to introduce our speakers to you, our adoring fans. And this today, well, today is 4 weeks today until Spark Toronto kicks off, and we're kicking off our fifth year of presenting at the Ontario Science Centre, our two-day Spark the Change conference. And I am thrilled today. I get to meet our first speaker in our series, and I'd like to introduce you to Marcia Schenk.
Hiya.
Hi. And so I said to Marcia before we started, and I have to remember that when I'm looking at the camera, I am looking at her as well. So you might see a lot of weird eye movements because it's been a while, so I tend to forget. So welcome, Marcia. It's so exciting you're joining us this year at Spark the Change Toronto.
I'm pretty excited about it too.
We are an interesting bunch. So I'm sure you'll find lots. And your friend, you're out in Portland, in Oregon.
I am in Portland, Oregon, though I began life a little closer to you.
Ooh, do tell.
I've become a West Coaster. Oh, I was born in New York City.
We won't hold that against you. That's okay. I've been there. It's beautiful. Or interesting.
It can be interesting.
Interesting. And so what took you out to Oregon? Am I saying that right? That's like when people say Toronto. So
they say Oregon.
Oregon, okay.
Oregon. I actually came here in 1961 to attend Reed College.
Okay.
And then I was gone for a while. I was back here for 14 or 15 years. Portland is a really fun, a creative city, and it's a nice scale, and it's got lots of green stuff, and we like it. We like the architecture.
Do you get the same weather as BC gets then?
No, we're actually, I shouldn't say this on a video that's going to be broadcast. Global warming has been a great gift to us. And we are far less rainy than Vancouver and Seattle.
Well, so you're not denying that global change exists. You're just saying that there can be benefits in certain areas.
Oh, gosh, no, I'm not denying it. In fact, I decry it every day because I'm a gardener. And
it's me too.
Quite serious. I mean, you can really see the impact of it if you're a gardener.
Yeah.
But Portland is just an easy city to live in. We like it. That's why we're here.
There you go. Well, that's very cool. I see. I'm a little bit of a mover myself, but I'm in Burlington, which is about 40 minutes outside of Toronto. And so it's convenient for Spark, which is awesome. And most of the team is from the GTA or just outside of it. We have some members that are out in the Cambridge area, which is another 40 minutes away and what have you, but mostly full Canadian team, bringing Spark to everybody. And we are fortunate. So this year we are having Spark the Change Toronto on June 13th and 14th. If you haven't been to Spark before, it is a two-day full conference. And we focus on, it's practice agnostic is what Jason Little, our grand poobah, likes to call it. Meaning that it doesn't subscribe to one particular modality of delivering change to organizations, which I love. And I was a complete neophyte when I came on the team 5 years ago, knew nothing about change management and agile. I just knew organizations sucked, and I never knew that there were ways to stop the sucking. So by the end of my first conference, I was absolutely transformed and transfixed, and it transpires that 5 years later, I'm still here doing this. So that tells you something right there.
It does.
All right. And so Marcia is one of our amazing speakers on day two, and that's June 14th. And she's taking the stage at 11 o'clock. And she's got a really, I'm quite intrigued by this because I love brain study and neuro study. And you have, on your website, you have some dendrites and action going on there. So I was kind of like, oh, let's see what this is all about. And so Marcia's going to be talking to us about ecosystem intelligence, recruiting the social brain to foment agility. Ooh. And so the description goes, we who seek organizational resilience are faced with the imperative to generate value in continually arising ecosystems. We can develop skills and practices to design new networks of value exchanges, which that I wrote that down because that's really cool. To do so, we must satisfy ancient neural networks, that tricky little limbic system, a social brain that evolved in the Stone Age and before, both for its delight in helping others and for its iron grip on energy, optimism, curiosity, and creativity. This fresh This fresh synthesis of business anthropology, ecosystem thinking, and social neuroscience introduces a powerful, pleasurable metric, an early indicator for agility fitness. Two stories from my practice illuminate how it works. So that value exchanges, new networks of value exchanges, that jumped out at me. So tell me a little more.
About that, sure.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but...
A lot of things. Okay. Well, value exchanges are the soup that human beings swim in.
Ooh. So
start right there. You and I are having an exchange right now.
Right.
As you know, it is not a transaction. There's no money involved.
Yes.
This is an exchange that we chose because we're both interested in something. And that something is, what does it take to make an organization more generative?
Cool. Okay.
That's why Spark is called Spark.
That is right? True.
Okay. So innovation can only happen in exchanges. And innovation is new networks of exchanges. So you picked up the diamond in the description for sure.
Sorry, I'm writing that down because that was really good.
Oh, that was really good. I like really good.
Innovation can only happen during exchanges. Oh, I like that.
In exchanges. Right.
Yes. So yes, yes.
If you invent something new, what makes it valuable?
The exchange of information or the exchange of...
There has to be somebody who benefits from it or another living thing that benefits from it. And if there is another living thing, then you can have an exchange. I mean, it could even be between us and, a spider.
I have to tell you that my exchanges with spiders generally include, Michael, come get the spider. Or I will very politely say to the spider, I don't go into your house. Please don't come into mine.
Does that work?
Well, it does after my son, if he's home, politely escorts the spider out, or the spider goes for a little swim in my toilet.
One of my favorite stories from years ago when I was first studying this whole bunch of stuff is with Umberto Maturana. He started his work in biology, and he is now recognized in philosophy of language and in many other fields. He told this wonderful story of going to a friend's for dinner. They were having a lovely dinner and they were kind of done eating and, they were kind of sitting back, and a spider came down right to the middle of the table, and he expressed alarm, and his host said, oh, don't be alarmed. That's Betsy. She waits until we're done and then she comes and eats the crumbs.
I'm not sure that I would have been so conciliatory to Betsy.
You might not have been, but this guy's a biologist and a philosopher and a student of coordination of action. And I found that very interesting. The spider waits till they're done.
So he anticipates some kind of proactive, logical thought on the part of the spider versus an opportunistic limbic thought process on behalf of the spider going, if I go down there, there's going to be some goodies. Well,
the thing is, the spider waits until they're done, which is, that was his example of coordination of action. So if you and I were having lunch and you left something and I said, are you done with that?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm done with it. Then you'd feel okay if I ate it. But if I ate it before asking you if you were done with it, you might not be quite as happy about it.
I would probably be, well, it would depend. So it would depend if it was, you know, French fries or ice cream. So, you know,
No,
that's very valuable. That's a very valuable way of, sorry, my hair is bugging the heck out of me. That's a very valuable way of looking at it, though I find it fascinating that Umberto would anthropomorphize the spider to think that it was that.
He didn't anthropomorphize it. There are many examples now of animals choosing to coordinate, and there are many. Well, the fact that the spider predictably waits until they're done eating, mm-hmm. means action is intentional. We don't know what story it made up about it. And he wasn't pretending that the spider made up a story.
Right.
It's an example of coordination between species. And since that has happened, we have many, many, many more examples of coordination between species. I have a photo on my slide deck that you will see of a mm-hmm. frog carrying a mouse across a river during a flood. And I've been using that slide now, and people have such a strong reaction to that slide. Someone snapped it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just know that I bought the photo. The frog is carrying the mouse across a river, and the river is flooded, and that's all we know about it. It's one of many examples that we now understand about coordination of action between species, which is actually something that we rely on in order to survive. But let's talk about coordination of action between human beings, because that's the innovation that you're interested in.
Well, you triggered something for me, because when I went and I stalked you a little bit, which I told you beforehand, and I had a look on your LinkedIn profile mm-hmm. and saw that you follow Brené Brown, who I think is just the biscuit. And when you were talking about the frog carrying the mouse across the river, my thought process went, it would be interesting to talk to the audience and find out what stories we're telling ourselves about what's going to happen between the frog and the mouse, because some of us would think, oh, that's so sweet. Look at the Mr. Froggy helping the mouse. And others are like, he's just getting him to dry land and then he's going to snap his head off. And then others are like, okay, that's really freaky. And why is the frog helping the mouse? And it's that disparity between the thought processes and that difference in the stories that we tell ourselves that helps to, in that exchange for the innovation and what have you. So fascinating. Exactly. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, go. I'm fascinated to hear where this goes.
Well, so I have been studying coordination of action, which is the basis of commerce, which is the basis of society, which is the basis of human life. It's coordination mm-hmm. of action. It's the basis of life generally, but we don't really need to go there. And the social brain, you know, kind of integrating that, the social brain allows for certain kinds of exchanges and tends not to allow for others. That is also extremely interesting.
And is that inclusion or exclusion of a limbic reaction? Like
limbic reaction. So I'm going to ask you to not use that term.
Oh, sorry.
Neuroscientists aren't so happy with that term.
Okay.
They're trying to make finer distinctions between what we think of as being conscious and we think of as being not conscious. Like whatever my digestion system is doing right now, it's not really.
It's an unconscious reaction.
But it's all sorts of, there are sorts of exchanges going on in my digestive system. Water is being taken, moisture is being removed and shared and moved around. So
yeah.
Those exchanges are all going on, controlled by my brain, but without my awareness.
Yes.
Okay. So if we talk about a new exchange, could be really innovative. So I remember when the microwave was introduced, I didn't want anything to do with it. I thought it was just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started listening to parents who have two children who are coming home at 6:30 and everybody's hungry and they can just throw something in the microwave. And I went, oh, now I get it. But the way I was raised, the introduction of a microwave didn't look interesting to me. And that's exactly how innovation works.
Yeah.
Okay. When Jane Fonda introduced her exercise videos, I'd been exercising for 20 years. And my friends started saying, oh, that's what you're doing. You're doing, you're doing your Jane Fondas. And I thought, that's also a very interesting example of what turns out to be an innovation and what isn't an innovation, and for whom. Mm-hmm. And for whom is it welcome? Now, there were people who thought it was just ridiculous and horrible and undignified and were completely just annoyed at the introduction of that product. Kind of the way I was with the microwave. It's like, oh, shoo. There were people who responded to the first Jane Fonda workout videos. That's how old they were. They were videos. With that, oh, this is undignified. I don't want any part of it. But mm-hmm. It actually produced a cultural explosion of women seeking different kinds of exercise. And now, 35 years later.
Which is crazy.
Well, you have an explosion. You got people who only do Zimba and people who only do barre and people who only do Pilates. And all that stuff wasn't there when the... So that's a really good example of how a new product can produce different exchanges, and it'll produce a kind of cultural drift that introduces the opportunity for other exchanges, such as Zumba and Pilates, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But in business, one of the complaints that I'm sure you've heard is, oh, those guys don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, we hear that a lot.
Those guys don't get it means they don't want to do it my way. Mm-hmm. Means I have some exchanges in mind that are not appealing to them.
And rather than change your ideas, you just pretend that they don't understand it or what have you.
Those guys are jerks. They don't want to buy my
widget.
They don't want to buy them. And so, when you watch that, you notice that there's something going on in the brain that makes person A interested in this and person B not interested, mm-hmm. and so forth. We are open to possibilities based on what the social brain will allow or acknowledge or recognize. Mm-hmm. And my work in ecosystem intelligence is illustrating to people what has to happen in the brain, mine and yours, mm-hmm. both bodies, for us to be open to that idea that you perhaps want to introduce or someone else wants to introduce. To me it looks to you it looks interesting, to someone else it looks stupid. Mm-hmm. And that's the social brain that's doing that. So that suggestion, like the microwave oven in my case, is going to land or not depending on stuff you learned very, very early in life. And in my case it was I'm quite a bit older than you. Virtuous women.
You might be surprised.
So virtuous women cook. They don't thaw stuff and throw it in the microwave. I mean, that's where I was coming from. You know, very much like real men don't eat quiche. Real girls, real women don't use microwaves. All right, well. That's just an example of how the social brain works and what it has to do with innovation and exchanges.
So there's a little bit of social conditioning in there as well that can plant those messages that are influencing your, not your, but anybody's reasonable assimilation of information. So if you come in with these preconceived notions, or if it's been drilled into you from the get-go that virtuous women don't thaw things, they get on their apron and I'm a huge cook and I'm a huge baker and, yeah. And you know, I don't judge anybody for using a microwave. Although I will confess on video that when there was a friend of mine and she would say to me, oh, you know, Elizabeth, I baked. I said, okay, well, great. What did you bake? And she, it was like some Betty Crocker mix. And I'm like, that's not baking. And I was judgy to support your point. It wasn't what I had been taught was baking. Yeah. And so I was like, no, that's opening a box. And I dismissed it, which was very not nice. So,
well, I mean, you know, judgment's an interesting term, but when you're talking about innovation and wanting people to accept stuff, you can think of it as, will they recognize it as valuable?
Yes.
And in my case, I didn't recognize the microwave as valuable. Mm-hmm. It was clear to me that the Jane Fonda workout video was extremely valuable, but not to me, because I was right. But it was extremely valuable to the newbies. I was a 20-year veteran. I just benefited from the fact that more people were interested in working out, so the equipment and the gym memberships and stuff improved. It was great. Right. But the value of the microwave was not one that I was able to grasp. And that was important. And I was, on the other hand, when FedEx, right about the same time, FedEx started making the promise, by tomorrow, we mean tomorrow, I thought that was incredibly sexy. Microwave not sexy, FedEx next day, very sexy. That's just a tiny little microcosm of what goes on in organizations and between companies and their customers.
I think it depends on your pain point as well, right? So if it's not a pain for you to cook, right? So I prefer, the only thing I use my microwave for typically is heating up my milk for my coffee, because I have one of those zhuzhu things. So I like to zhuzhu my milk before I put it in. Or defrosting corn. That's pretty much it.
Well,
but my pain point around, I need my book tomorrow, or I need this package to go to this place tomorrow, that to me is a more important pain point than how quickly I can cook a dinner, because I've been taught to cook, so I can manage either way. Shipping, not my strong suit. So I need to get somebody with that expertise. That's where my pain point is.
Right. And value doesn't always have to do with the pain points, but it often does, but not always. Like, I bought a fountain.
True.
I bought a fountain for my backyard. It wasn't because of a pain point. It just, I like it. I like the noise, right?
I just bought one myself.
What we value is a social matter. And that is something that has not been clear to us. If we value it, it's because the social brain values it.
And so how do you then, and you were heading there and I diverted a little bit, but how do you then, when you look at the workplace, mm-hmm. and there's all this conflicting messaging around bringing your social brain to work and having that delineation. And I remember talking to somebody and they said, you know, when I come home, I stop at a tree in my front yard and I put my work day on the tree. Just, I stop there, my work persona, my work thinking, my work everything stops at the tree. And when I go in the house, I am who I need to be in the house. And I find it fascinating that we feel we need to have that separation of, you know, church and state, if you will. And so when you're looking at that exchange and that social thinking, how does that now, do you think, influence the workplace and organizations in general?
You mean the amount of stress in the workplace that the people want to leave on the tree before they go into the house? Or do you mean something else?
So that social thinking around how we behave and perhaps the differentiator between, you know, business and personal, and should there be should you be a different person?
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
We've, whether you should or shouldn't, there's no possibility of being a different person.
Yeah.
What you can do is learn to manage your stress and decide who you want to be in every instance.
Every exchange.
But if you think about that, let me just take your example. The person who wants to leave the workday on the tree and enter the house wants to do that because of the nature of the interactions they want to have after they open the door. It's the quality of the interactions that the social brain wants to really have a hand in.
That's so good.
Man, what's so good about it? What was it about that that caught you?
It was that choice. That level of social interaction that you choose to have, that's really cool.
Right.
Because that's, I think a lot of, you made a really valid point about the unconscious and the conscious brain. And sometimes I think our unconscious brain is a little pushy in how it helps us or doesn't help us to engage in social exchanges. You know, our biases or our... Yeah. Whatever that get in the way. And what you had me thinking about earlier was when you're in the workplace and you're in a situation and you are having an exchange, whether it's towards innovation or just a team meeting or what have you, how do you bring, you know, what you're going to teach us at Spark? Because I see so many applicability. I don't even know if that's a word, but applicabilities for what you're talking about. How do you use that to choose the right level of social engagement that you're going to have in an organization?
Right. Well, I mean, as you might imagine, there are some skills involved.
Mm-hmm.
Before you start building the skills, you can just kind of pause and notice that in your work, let's say you're in an organization, you have different kinds of exchanges. You have exchanges that are almost not happening. They're so blah. They're so meh.
Yeah.
There are exchanges that are depleting to people who are having the same argument for the ninth time in the next office that really are draining. So yeah. I use the word depleting. So I have four types. I have rich exchanges, sweet spot exchanges, ho-hum exchanges, and depleting exchanges.
Ho-hum exchanges. Wouldn't that be awful to be somebody thought of as a ho-hum exchange?
Well, you have. We all have ho-hum exchanges.
For sure.
My mantra is make your business as close to 100% rich exchanges as you possibly can, because a rich exchange happens when people acknowledge each the difference between each other's realities.
Yeah, the stories.
Take the moment. It isn't about time. It's about the quality of acknowledgement. I get you're one of mine. And yeah. I get you're one of mine is totally different than everything else.
That's almost falls into sort of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs that...
Nope, it does not.
No?
It does not.
Acceptance?
Acceptance, belonging.
Yes.
Belonging at the bottom, it's the foundation. Maslow's upside down.
Okay.
He's got hunger, sex, blah, blah, at the bottom. The
right.
bottom is belonging. The most important
Very true.
Human driver is belonging. So that's why the social brain is so powerful. And you have to take that back. The social brain is older than dinosaurs. Mammals, our line,
yep.
if you are older than the dinosaurs. That social brain, that way of living by taking care of your young, and because you're taking care of your young, doing a lot of cooperating with others of your kind as well as not your kind. That difference, I'm going to coordinate in one way with you if you're one of mine, and I'm going to coordinate in a very different way with you if you are not one of mine. That is a mammalian characteristic. It's probably 300 million years old, might be even older than that. So
you're blowing my mind, Marcia. I'm just saying.
I'm intending to.
Well done. Because we've got just a couple more minutes, and then we have to scooch off. But wow.
Anytime you want. So if you change the food of a mother rat, the baby will not nurse and it will die of starvation. That is how strong the social brain is. Not my mother, not one of mine.
Yep.
I'm not eating, even though I'm starving. It's so powerful. So in the workplace, we have to know you're dealing with a bunch of mammals who might not recognize you as one of them.
Right.
And there's also a few other things, like mammals don't like being crowded, and mammals kind of like fresh air. There's all kinds of other things that are making the workplace difficult, but you want to jump, so jump. Where do you want to go?
That's crazy. So I can't jump to another point, because if we tell people too much more, then, you know, it's that whole milk cow situation, right?
Okay.
I mean, honestly, you've made so many incredible points. I'm thoroughly chuffed. I can't wait. So I'm the person that runs around like a little bit of a lunatic at the event, although that's gotten better. But I tend to have to run in and out, but I think, you know, and I'm very excited that I'm hoping nothing pulls me out so that I miss your whole session, because I love talking neuroscience, and my background's in healthcare, and I have a kid on the spectrum as well. So anything to do with, you know, the brain and how it functions and that different levels of engagement and what have you just fascinates me. And I've always been the outlier in any organization I've ever worked for, which is why Spark the Change fundamentally changed me. Because I've always been the one getting in trouble. I've always been the one, why can't you do it like everybody else? And, you know, I guess never getting recognized as one of their own. And not that I'm a shit disturber so much, but I think the way I think. And so the things that you're telling me, I'm like, okay, so it's not so bad to be me. And I'm finding my tribe now, which is awesome, you know, after 40 odd years. But that's crazy. I'm gonna gush a little, and I'm good, because I'm excited. So anyway, if you're listening or watching, you have been listening to Marcia Schenck, and she is the owner of It's Best Work.
Best Work People.
Yeah. And if you jump on her website, bestwork.biz, you're going to see this wonderful neuron with all the dendrites and synapses going on, speaking to you. And it talks about the ability to welcome and respond to change is a special kind of vitality that we can cultivate in our organizations. There is no recipe. Our brains evolved to optimize collectively in small groups with very secure social ties. Ooh, ecosystems continuously arise. Too many workplaces are hugely stressed. For most individuals and organizations, the demands of agility beg for new skills, new practices, and new kinds of smarts. So true. So if you are interested in hearing more from Marcia, because you should be, because it was crazy good, then you can visit sparkthechange.ca. We are 50% sold out, which is awesome. Still 4 weeks to go, so we have definitely have room for a few more people to join us. And thank you so much, Marcia. Like I've been writing notes this whole time. I don't know if you saw this, but like there's little notes everywhere, just a little aha moment. So I'm so excited to get to meet you in person.
Great, me too.
You fly out from the coast, and we'll be chitter-chatting and doing all that great stuff.
Yep.
So I think we're gonna say, you know what, people, if you want to learn more, you're going to have to come to Spark and come and meet Marcia.
Have a glass of wine with us. Okay.
Well, that's at the speaker's dinner or something after. We don't serve wine during the event, but we are going to have a Espresso Bella is joining us again. And so you get, I mean, she just is, oh, if you enjoy the odd caffeinated beverage.
Okay.
Fresh latte, just I'm telling you, is pure happiness. We have the food dudes joining us again for our menu, and the Ontario Science Center is just a hoot ton of fun. So thank you very much for joining me, Marcia. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure to meet you. And I'm going to stop us recording, but we're still going to chit-chat for a couple of seconds. So again, everybody, if you'd like to join us, check out sparkthechange.ca. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, and please visit us at sparkthechangetoronto.ca to learn more, or you can follow us on Twitter at @sparkconfto.